Tonight, John B. has been sober since April 11th, 1985. He's a member of the Canon Church Solutions Group. Meets Monday nights and Thursday nights at 8 o'clock by Ronald Reagan and Webb Jen in Gwinnett County. And so he has given us one of his nights to come and speak with us. And it really means a lot to me because the first time I ran into John was at the Gwinnett Room at a Wednesday meeting that I like to make when I can. And Bill Roop had shared his wisdom. Many of you know who Bill Roop is. And John chose to follow Bill. And boy, that's something to do. It was a complex subject, and he simplified it. And I swear I thought Bill W. was being channeled at that moment. So I hope you can live up to this, John. Don't want you to feel uneasy or anything. Welcome, John.
All right, thank you. I am an alcoholic. My name is John. And I thanked him for the courage, not the wisdom, for asking me to be here. And, you know, this is my old stomping grounds, Napa. You know, my journey started in North Carolina back in 85, but I came down here in January of 86, and that was so I can get this gal that I was seeing at the time, because she was from North Carolina also, and I figured, you know, we're from North Carolina, that's where we need to go back and, you know, settle. And I'm still here after all the years. The gal that I speak of, she's been a big influence in my life. Not only in the old days where she used to bartend for me, and then when her family wanted to commit her and stuff, and she ended up getting sober. I don't want to lose a good bartender, so I ended up getting sober and marrying her, and we've been enjoying, you know, since 1988. We live in marital bliss. And on the way over here, I mentioned to her, I said, look, you need to behave or else I won't give you a good spot on the tape because they're recording tonight. I know. I'm a ham. Anyway, God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change. The things that I cannot change today is the fact that I've come to accept that I am an alcoholic. And the courage to change the things I can, well, and the wisdom to know the difference, I know what I had to go through to get the next drink. And I know the freedom that I experience on a daily basis when I'm in the middle of the bed of Alcoholics Anonymous enjoying sobriety by the grace of God. And the thing for me, you know, is when I'm asked to come tell my story, there's a part about in our third step that when we make this decision to have, where we turn our will and our lives over to the care of God and we ask Him to remove, you know, our difficulties, in order that we can bear witness, you know, of His power, His love, and His way of life. And I think I'm at a point now in my recovery where I'm just bearing witness of what God has done for me through the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's just that simple. I have not done anything to speak of. You're not looking at a rocket scientist, believe me, and my story will prove that. The it's almost like the other day, the man that Tim mentioned, Bill Roop, he's got 53 years of sobriety and stuff, and we play this little card game before the meeting called, I think it's called King's Corners, okay? And we played a couple of rounds, and we had a couple of winners, and then the meeting was about to get started. So I got the cards, and as I was putting them back into its box, I noticed that there was like three or four cards in there. And I looked at Bill, I said, look, Bill, I said, we weren't playing with a full deck, and we got winners today. I said, it's almost like AA. You don't have to be playing with a full deck to get a winner in AA. So, you know, life gives us, you know, these little, lessons if we become aware. And I think that's the biggest thing that has happened in my sobriety is this awareness. You know, I'm not so self-centered to the point where, I can't realize anything that's going around me, or, you know, what my fellow man is doing, or what, you know, my wife is feeling, or anything. I'm sensitive to a lot of things. So, and that's just another blessing of being here in Alcoholics Anonymous. But, you know, my moment of clarity came when I realized that my body was just full of blood. I looked around the room, all the paraphernalia of empty whiskey bottles and beer cans and some other paraphernalia that I wound up progressing, you know, through, you know, some other things, a drug addiction. And here I am for the third time in my life, you know, trying to take my life. And what made me snap was I was having some fair weather friends over. We were doing our deal, and I went in my back room to go get more to bring out there in the living room. But while I was back there, all I heard was them laughing. And that made me snap because, you know, there was nothing to laugh about. I was really sick and tired of being sick and tired. I was repeating time and time again that, you know, that same old thing, it'll be different, or I'll find some imaginary way to, you know, be able to control and enjoy this stuff and not experience the demoralization that I would wake up in the morning when I tried to shave, you know, my face, and I couldn't stand looking in the mirror. I didn't like what I had become. And I kicked them out and proceeded to take my life unsuccessfully. But because it was unsuccessful, I had only one prayer left, not a bargaining prayer like before, and it was, God, I'm killing me and I can't stop it. Please help. And the best that I could do in the condition that I was in for the remaining of the night, I just decided to clean up the joint, you know. Just got trash bags, everything. And I spent all night long till morning just cleaning up this little duplex. You know, washing walls, washing this, cleaning, throwing things out in the dumpster. And then the next day, I get a letter in the mail. And it says, you know, it says, where are your friends? And I had to answer, I don't have no friends. I did have a kid brother. He's a year and a half younger. He's 6'4", mean as a rattlesnake, muscles like crazy. And his solution for his older brother was to beat his ass, excuse my French, every time he saw me to recover. That was his solution. Just beat me straight. And I mean, I took some whoopings. And then it said, you know, so where are you working? And I had no employment. I was unemployable. And then it went on to say, you know, there's people that are in your condition that meet on a regular basis, and this is the address, and the next meeting that they're having is on Monday night. And I decide, well, okay, do my best, you know, not to get out of control from, you know, Saturday until Monday at 8 p.m. But I was still involved in, you know, some other stuff. I was dealing dope and, you know, things like that. That was the lifestyle I had evolved to. But I called my cousin Georgie. He was a bartender, and we made arrangement for him to pick me up and take me to this place. It was at a major intersection to the left of it. And they picked me up, and as we were going there, here I am, you know, start thinking, man, it's kind of desperate, you know, to go to a place where strangers are that I don't know and, you know, try to find out about getting help for my out-of-control alcohol and drug addiction and stuff. So I said to him, I said, hey, listen, gang, I know y'all are going to open the bar and stock it and stuff like that. Why don't y'all just let me off right here at the corner and y'all go on your merry way and I'll just, you know, walk over to the place. And they said, no, we made extra time for you, you know. And I said, okay, you know. And then we went into, you know, into the parking lot. And, you know, my rationalizer came on again. I said, I'll just be real polite about the ride, watch him drive off, you know, from the parking lot, and then I'm booking. And I got out, and I did that. I thanked him. And my cousin George's girlfriend, Kathy, said, John, why don't you go knock on that door and see if we brought you to the right place? And I went, okay, you know. And I knocked on the door. And fortunate for me, these two guys that had arrived 30 minutes early, they started the coffee percolator, you know, and I'm grateful. I am really grateful for these two guys, right? Because they were responsible about their service commitment. They got there 30 minutes early. They didn't have the attitude that it's no big deal to set up the room or start the coffee early. Imagine if they had that kind of attitude and they came 20 minutes before the hour. And here I am arriving, you know, 10 minutes earlier than that. I don't know if, you know, I would have sat out there waiting for someone to arrive. So I don't know what that would have happened, but I just count them as part of my blessing that they were there and had the rooms ready to receive a guy that was really, really hurting, believe me. In fact, I had such a fear about meeting that, you know, I didn't want to drink, but I did smoke a joint and even timed it. I knew when I would be coming down to be able to listen. So, you know, and I remember my first meeting when they were reading sort of like the preamble that we're not affiliated with any sect, denomination, politics, or organization. And guess what my mind thought of? My goodness, the police ain't watching this group of people. And that made me comfortable. I mean, that's how paranoid I was. You know, that's how out there I was. And then the next miracle was they had a guy telling his story just like this that happened to be my hero from ninth grade. Ninth grade. He was the best athlete of our school, the best student of our school. He always, you know, he always would pick me in gym. No one ever wanted to pick, you know how they split off teams? I was like, and you should have seen, I've grown, but I was just, you know, just bony little thing, looked so uncoordinated, just always was outside of groups and everything, and that's just one of the reasons why I enjoyed alcohol so much. It didn't matter once I put that couple of drinks down. I was the boss of the group, but he was my hero, and here he is, my hero, talking about where alcohol led him, and how he lost his self-respect, he lost his family, the respect of his family, the respect of his community, of his church, all this stuff. And then his story went on to say how, you know, because he got involved in recovery, all right, that he's regained self-respect, he's been able to straighten out his past, he gained the respect of his family, his children came back, he's reestablished in the community, and he's making an honest living, and he's here, you know, sharing, you know, the journey. And, you know, I was like, now if my hero can, you know, experience and just go down the wrong path, because I thought it was like a moral deficiency with me, you know, and I didn't know anything of, as it described as an illness. And later on, once I truly got involved with, you know, into recovery and got with my first sponsor, you know, I began to learn this new information. And I was starting to get the answers that I had on the streets that I was asking myself and banging my head against the wall trying to figure out, why isn't this working for me? Why is it everybody that I know seems to be, you know, succeeding and I'm going down fast, you know? Why? And I didn't know, you know, that I was an alcoholic. I was the first one to show it, but the last one to know it, you know. And I can remember my first sponsor asking me point blank, he says, are you an alcoholic? And I said, hell no. I ain't no alcoholic. He goes, really? He says, then why did you drink? I said, why did I drink? I says, if you had as many problems as you know I've had, and you know things that I've been through, you'd want a drink too. To kind of like, he goes, well, let's take a look at something then. He says let's go to the book Alcoholics Anonymous and let's read Dr. Silkworth. And he had me read his description, basically, of why men and women drink. Okay? And I read it, and I go, I don't get it. What the heck does it mean? Likes the effects produced by it. He goes, well, you've been to a few meetings. They read the promises, don't they? I said, yeah. I said, well, he goes, well, let's put the sentence, when I drank, and read one of the promises. So we went, you know, to the book where the promises are listed, and I said, okay, when I drank, I had a new freedom and a new happiness. When I drank, I intuitively knew how to handle situations that used to baffle me. When I drank, I can see how my experience could benefit others. You know? I mean, you know how many times I became a lawyer at a bar. Or a sex therapist or whatever, you know. I mean, I knew every subject. And we reread it again. And he says, do you get the point? I said, yeah, I get your point now. And he goes, well, let me promise you something. He says, if you accept this journey through the 12 steps, you can have the same effect that you used to look for booze to have on you. And that's a lesson that has carried through even today. That when adversity hits my life, and it has over the years now, and I'll get into a little bit of that. The thing is, my mind, as the result of working the 12 steps, never goes to the thought that a drink or any mind-altering chemical can make this situation better. My mind has been restored. I am recovered from that seemingly hopeless state of mind that I brought in to these rooms. Okay? That's the miracle of AA for me. My sponsor that I have today talks to me when we're talking about other issues, life, and says, it says, this is just a human condition, you know, that you're dealing with. That's all. Just like, in fact, even the 12 and 12 refers it to, you know, can we accept responsibility just like normal folks do, you know, when things, you know, hit them, unemployment, ill health, you know, failing children, whatever, you know, the circumstances. You know, can we, you know, face those things, accept them, take, you know, action, and without self-destructing? And, you know, the answer to that is yes, as long as we, you know, stick to our spiritual principles, which will solve all our problems. And it's been my experience that it has. The thing about my first sponsor, Rex, he was such a sage. And him and his sponsor, Tom, both now, you know, God rest their souls, they died of old age and they died sober. And both of them with over 40 years. And what my granddaddy sponsor, Tom, he used to have a beach house at Riceville Beach. And he had me, you know, meet him over there. And he mentioned to me, and I thought I was going to just hang outside the beach house. And he says, just go into the house, you know, and wait for me. I said, well, I don't have a key or anything. Or do you hide a key underneath a mat? He goes, no, I never lock it. He goes, there's no possessions. It's, you know, just stuff. He goes, but when you go in there, he says, you'll notice I have a nice stereo system and a nice TV. And he did. And he says, just do me a favor. He says, just enjoy the view, you know, the ocean and, you know, just Riceville Beach, real pretty. And he says, but don't turn on the stereo or the TV. And he says, just sit there quietly. And I said, okay, Tom. And he says, I'm on my way. And he says, oh, yeah, one more favor. And I said, yeah, what's that? He goes, and see if you can stand yourself. Click. And I go, oh, man, what's these old-timers trying to teach me now, you know? So, I'm in there, and I noticed the things that he was mentioning. I didn't, you know, turn on anything, and I just sat there quietly trying to sit in his rocking chair and stuff, and about 10 minutes went by, and finally he pulled out up in the driveway, and I run out of the house. I said, I can't stand myself. He goes, now you know what the problem is. You know, he says, let's go have supper and then we'll go to a meeting. And then, you know, after that, it was just basically, you know, walking the steps with the help of a sponsor, taking inventory for the first time. And I can remember, when I was doing it, I said, are your guts supposed to be this tight? You know? And he goes, you're doing it perfect, son. You're doing it perfect. Now, I don't know what it is, whether it's faith, coincidence, or their wisdom, but when it came to do my fifth step, they didn't want to hear my story. They didn't want to hear my defects of character or the nature of my wrongs or anything. They set me up with a clergyman. Okay? And it happened that this clergyman, he also was a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Couldn't have been the... You know, if I had to pick the person to, you know, say, let's do a fifth step together, man, I would have gotten the wrong... You know, it just never worked out. Would have never worked out. Okay? But in this situation, it was very therapeutic. I did my best. And after, you know, a long discussion with this man, he gets up and he goes to the kitchen and says, I'm going to give you another cup of coffee. And when I get back, I want you to tell me what you don't want to tell me. And I thought, you know, I've evaded again. See, I'm holding on. I'm, you know, it's like I used to play, like our literature talks about, you know, I was Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde. I was the, I always like to set up the stage characters. I want to reflect, not only in sobriety at times, but in the past that, you know, I'm okay. I got the walls up, everything, you know, I just don't come in my space. I just don't want you to know anything about me because somehow you're going to use it against me. You know, that's how I was, very defensive. But yet, when he came back in the room, I shared with him stuff that actually I thought I was going to take to my grave. You know, how I mustered the courage, I don't know. I just took a risk. I took a chance. I took a chance that what was said between us two was going to remain between us two. And I've never heard anybody come back and say, so-and-so told me that you said that in a fifth step. It just ain't never happened. But what I experienced from doing the fifth step with him, as I left, I felt like I unloaded a bunch of bricks off my shoulders. It seems like I had some giddy up in my step, okay? As far as getting those very secrets, you know, out. The shame just seemed to disappeared, right? Now, this is Wilmington, North Carolina, 1985, and across the street, I noticed about 250 people in a big circle, all dressed up like mafiosos, men and women. And in the middle is a guy that's a good friend of mine from high school named Mike. And he's the casting director for Dino De Laurentiis Films at the time. And I got so excited because it's been years since I've seen him. He was the first person I've seen that I knew in a long time. And I got someone to get his attention that when he was through, you know, giving instructions, if I could just briefly say hello. And when we got reunited, got a little excited, he asked me what I was doing in Wilmington and stuff, and I said, I'm just trying to straighten out some things, you know. And he goes, John, because I'm Greek, okay? And he says, I can put you in the movie. Now, I'm a newcomer. I only got like maybe 7 months or so. And of all the things to remember is anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions. I didn't make no amends to nobody. I didn't want nobody to know where I was at, you know, because I come out of Charlotte, okay? And I just thank Mike. I said, thank you, Mike, for the offer. But, man, it's like I got some things to work out, maybe the next movie or something. And I always think that was, you know, pretty funny that I, you know, that's how my mind goes, you know. And so I went back and I got to, you know, do exactly what I was instructed to do, to sit quietly and reflect over, you know, what I've been doing up to this point. And as far as this God thing, you know, I did kind of start feeling, having a little spiritual experience, you know, in 6 and 7. 6 and 7 really didn't play a big part until I moved here and got involved with my next sponsor. Rex and Tom pretty much laid the foundation of my recovery, you know. Really, we really smashed the idea, you know. There was no reservations about, you know, what kind of stripes I got on. I'm an alcoholic, believe me. I'm an alcoholic, true and true. And but when I got here, I was able to find NABA Club, and one of the men that sponsored me, Bob C. His nickname was 6 and 7, you know, and he was all about taking personal responsibility. You know, it's you know, from this point forward, you know, you can't play the victim role. Okay, you know, from this point forward, it's your responsibility to grow in understanding and effectiveness, as the book talks about. And he was big on talking about mediocrity. And believe me, other than the book Alcoholics Anonymous, the dictionary was also a big part of my recovery, because I had to go look at what the word mediocrity meant, you know. And one of the things that I saw in there was a person of no importance, you know. No distinguished character, nothing. And this is supposed to be a program of attraction, not promotion, you know. And every one of my sponsors, they all had something that I wanted from them. You know, that everyone had a gift. And they're the ones that, you know, have taught me how to be a husband, how to be a worker among workers, how to straighten out my past, how to take responsibility, you know, for my own self. And the times now that when I face adversity, when I inventory it, I can go straight back to the guy I see in the mirror, because that guy made a decision based on self that placed him in a position to be harmed later on. So probably some of the things that I've done today will come and bite me, you know, all because I neglected to do or not do something, you know, for myself. And so, you know, I have no one to blame, because I was big at, man, I know how to take other people's inventory, you know. The blame game, you know, that's me. But this program, you know, what it's teaching me is, you know, how to grow up, basically, just how to grow up. And how Bob used to always tell me, he says, son, you know, it's time to develop character and quit being one. And, you know, and this is how they spoke to me. Like a true father. Like a true uncle. Like a true brother. You know, we hold this, ourselves accountable. And what's the payoff? See, there's a payoff. My sponsor, when I'm involved in my character defects and stuff like that, you know, he only asks real simple and real soft. What's the payoff? There's got to be a payoff here, you know. And when I'm doing the things that's suggested, you know, the payoff, when I take risks and disclose myself to my sponsor, and we work through, you know, issues, then I get the benefits. I get the benefits of experiencing freedom from within, you know, peace of mind. And when I got here, I had none of that stuff. None of that stuff. Today I get to enjoy, you know, many things. at my second year of sobriety, Bob, he says, you know, it's time for you to learn about gratitude. And whenever I'm at meetings and stuff like that, you know, I like sharing about AA literature and our AA history. And Bob was the key person to introduce me to AA Comes of Age, the AA and the old timers, you know, pass it on as Bill sees it, all those things, you know. And I know that, you know, if it wasn't for those that came before me that sacrificed, you know, and spent time and money and put it ahead of their families and their successes and stuff like that, just so waiting for a guy like me to come in, you know, and reap the benefits of someone else's labor, you know. So today, I've always felt like that I don't want to be that weak link in that chain that they've been, you know, making for such a long time. I don't want to be that one person. I want to be that person that the next alcoholic that I cross paths with will be able to receive a clear message, you know, of AA, or at least to the best of my ability, the best interpretation of what this book right here is talking about. Okay? And, you know, and so I always, you know, stay grateful for that. I've had so many good, you know, teachers. I'm so grateful that our fellowship is men and women, because one of my biggest heroes, God rest her soul, Mary Campbell, which many people, you know, remember and stuff, you know, she taught me a couple of things about her life that I want to, you know, embrace and try to duplicate. The first thing when she woke up was she wanted to get to know her higher power a little bit better today than the day before. That was one of her goals, to always be able, you know, to experience the God of her understanding more and more in her life. And the second thing was how her thoughts for others always saved her ass. You know, that's all she was about. You know, loving the alcoholics that come in, you know, into her life. And not just really other alcoholics, you know, just every person. Being able, you know, to allow, you know, and it goes back to the awareness. Where I'm in the grocery store, I got three items to check out, and I see a struggling mother with two kids trying to keep them under control, you know, and I just go, why don't you go ahead? I got plenty of time. That's what AA has done for me. Okay? That's how it's changed my character. Okay? I'm not that busy. And I'm not that damn important either. Okay? But, and you know what? It's one of those things where they say, do something for someone else and then don't tell nobody about it. And that's the kind of little things that I do for myself to get a little kick, you know, for myself. I just get a little kick to show kindness. And some people just, you know, they're just so busy into, you know, the life stuff. And then the other thing is, and I look at my watch. I know we have some newcomers here. And the reason I do that is because this ain't going to last for much longer. Is that, you know, I know how to, you know, recite and remember a lot of things, you know, from the book. And one of the things that the early sponsor, my granddaddy sponsor, used to tell, he had a photographic memory, so he could recite AA literature no problem. Pea soup for him, as he would say. But he used to also tell me, he says, look, dummy, he goes, it's, you know, you take what you read and try to put it in practice out there. That's what it's about. Okay? And so I always want to read so I don't get, you know, make any mistakes. And one of the things, just to give you an example, another example is there was a group of people, and they were discussing, you know, about sex relations. And there was a newcomer, you know, just kind of like doing one of these, eavesdropping. And someone misquoted the book and says, you need to go to page 96, you know, to handle this, you know, sex problem. And the newcomer heard it. Now, the actually working out of, you know, relations and stuff like that is on page 69. But she heard page 96, so she went home, you know, and when she got home, this is what she was reading. It says, do not be discouraged if your prospect does not respond at once. It says, search out another alcoholic and try again. You are sure to find someone desperate enough to accept with eagerness what you offer. We find it a waste of time to keep chasing a man who cannot or will not work with you. If you leave such a person alone, he may soon become convinced that he cannot recover by himself. So, we have our humor here in AA. We're not a glum lot. Our book says we're not a glum lot. And it's like this one man used to share with me all the time. He says, John, this is an experience you must not miss. All my years in recovery, I have been encouraged and pushed to, you know, to better things. I've been, you know, counseled. I've been talked down to, you know. But it's all, you know, part of this love that we have for one another. There's so many lessons. And I used to always, Mary, I used to follow Mary when she was asked, and Bill, I said, man, how do y'all put it together and come and tell your story? You know, you have 50 plus years sobriety, all the lessons, all the experience, all the wonderful things, all the, you know, how do you condense it into 45 minute talk, you know? And it's like, well, we just, you know, put it in God's hands and whatever, you know. It's like I was telling Rebecca, the first time that I was ever told to speak, they said, look, son, you're going to tell three stories tonight. The one you think you're going to tell, the one you do, and then the one you should have. So, you know. But for me, personally for me, one of the other gifts that I received early in my sobriety was a lady, and she gave me a Bible one day. And it was a English version, not a King James, not Thou Thou, you know. It's like, look, this is very simple to read, and I suggest maybe looking at the Proverbs, you know, where it has basic practical wisdom for your life, and make that part of your little meditation and stuff like that. And then I discovered in the book Alcoholics Anonymous how it encouraged members of AA, you know, to seek out other religious bodies. Not necessarily, you don't have to join nothing, but see where religious people are right, you know. And I've taken up that suggestion, and you know, it's been a wonderful adventure. I don't argue with them, you know. I can accept a lot of the things. I see a lot of similarities, and the messages are, I used to hear a lot of the same messages before I came to AA. I used to work with a Pentecostal lady, Mary. And when I would come home, come to work, so with dry heaves, I was in the restaurant business back then, and hung over, and all I wanted to do was get to the ice machine, get a scoop of ice and some water, and start drinking it, you know, just to put the fire out. And Mary would pull me in the kitchen and say, baby, when are you going to find, you know, when are you going to get right with God? And I would say, don't worry, I'll find God. She says, well, let me tell you something. He says, he ain't lost. You are. You know, and I come, you know, to AA, and I hear the same message. Quit looking for God. He ain't lost. You are. You know, through the steps, I was able to clear enough of the wreckage where I could finally say, wow, there is a God, you know, and he's working fine in my life. There's two passages I like to close with. One on the note, you know, if you're new, if you're not new, I know our country is going through, you know, some trials and tribulations in itself. I'm pretty sure all families have some kind of, you know, problem that they're facing. just like mine. One of the things that I hear in AA is don't leave before the miracle happens. Okay? And one of the encouraging passages that I've come across that sustained me is comes from the other non-approved literature book. And it's out of Jeremiah, and it talks about how my Creator declares, "For I know the plans I have for you, plans to prosper you and not to harm you, plans to give you hope and a future." Okay? And I hold on to that. And then, I love the way our book closes as far as on the 164th page, where it talks about, "Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you unto them." Thank y'all for having me tonight. It's been good to see y'all. Thank you, Tim.
Tradition states that there are no dues or fees or any membership. However, your generous contributions support this group and AA its own. And John, boy, thank you very much, man. You delivered. Okay. I've asked Charles from Clarkston to hand out the chips.
And here's a blue chip speaker meeting, right?
Yes, sir.
They have a chip system that measures your time away from that last ring. Started off the white one, which is the most important one here. For anyone coming in new or anyone coming back, for me, it's the commitment chip for a new way of life. That's what happened to me. Yeah. Silver or whatever you call it. For 30 days, 30 days without drink. Got red for 90 days, without a drink. Yellow for 6 months. Green for 9 months. Woo-hoo!
Gotcha.
Anybody else? And blue for 1 year or multiples. Okay. Then we'll offer the white chip again, just in case you hadn't made up your mind.
Thank you, Charles. And that's how it's done. Appreciate it. Thank you very much. Do we have any AA related announcements that anyone would like to share? Yes, Frank. Thank you, Frank. The 31st is a Sunday,
yes.
1 o'clock. And you said 4 o'clock tomorrow for Jerry's? 4
o'clock Saturday.
4 o'clock Saturday at Salvation Army for Jerry's memorial service. Anybody else? Okay, next week we have the 20th anniversary or the sobriety of 20 years for Carol G., who's our office manager. And many of you who are members of NAVA
see and talk to Carol frequently, and she it's going to be exactly on the date. She picked up her white chip January 25th, 1990. So I hope many of you come back and help her celebrate. And then the week after that, we've got Bruce H., who's been sober since 1986. He's a member of Skyland. And he picked up a chip November 17th here at the 545 meeting, and really loved what he had to say, so we wanted to be able to share more of that with you. Okay, so anything else at all? Okay. Speak now or forever hold your peace. I'd like to remind everybody that anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles for personalities. For those who will, please join us in the Lord's Prayer. Harish, would you please take us out?
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
I was going to ask about the tape. When will that?
Yeah.
Okay, so I can just swing by.
If you did want to make a contribution to the band, for a CD, we do have a CD.
Okay.
suggesting $5
to give away. Yeah, yeah. Well, it's nice meeting you. Yeah, yeah.
Thank you very much for having me. John, you're welcome to come down and see you.
Please pick up your cups and all of that stuff.